Have you been hit with a crippling cyber attack that stemmed from a third-party vendor? Executive Order 14028 calls for changes in cyber supply chain risk management to help agencies work with vendors more securely. Risk Recon, a MasterCard company, gives you the visibility to understand and act on risk in your cyber supply chain, giving you the clarity you need to do business with vendors who meet all compliance standards. Don't wait. Learn more today at riskrecon.com.
Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Risk Recon, a MasterCard company. Here's today's moderator, Tom Temin.
The State Department not only operates around the world, it has a supply chain that also extends throughout the world. Like every agency, State is working to modernize its information technology. That means acquiring new software or developing its own using open source modules. Either way, it's got to deal with the White House mandate to ensure software supply chain security. For how it's going about that task, I spoke with the director of the Cybersecurity Supply Risk Management Program in State's Bureau of Information Management, Zetra Batiste.
We're operating under Executive Order 14028. It's almost, well, it's getting to be close to a year old, not quite yet, and all about enhancing software supply chain security is one of the big sections, but in general it is, as your title implies, supply chain security. What are you doing with respect to compliance with that executive order?
That's a very good question. Software security, as you know, is of vital importance to the federal government. When using commercial off-the-shelf software, agencies have not historically been able to see into a supplier's software development lifecycle to ensure the integrity of the process, nor what security controls have been put in place to prevent bad actors from inserting malicious code or tampering with the software. However, the software development lifecycle must be secured, and the National Institute of Standards and Technology explicitly address software security, including the use of secure software development framework to reduce vulnerabilities, mitigate the potential impact of undetected or unaddressed vulnerabilities, and to address the root causes to prevent future reoccurrences in the development of software products and services. So Executive Order 14028 calls upon government agencies like the State Department to establish baseline security standards for software sold to the government, including requiring developers to provide greater visibility into their software and making security data publicly available. This mandate currently applies to all critical software that NIST defines as having one of the following characteristics. Is designed to run with elevated privileges or manages privileges, has direct or privileged access to networking or computing resources, is designed to control access to data or operational technology, performs a function critical to trust, or operates outside of normal trust boundaries with privileged access. Our strategy for compliance is first to ensure every stakeholder within the SDLC understands the mandate. Additionally, the Office of the eCISL's Cybersecurity Supply Chain Risk Management Team has implemented a multi-pronged assessment process to review all ICT procurements. This process includes research on the supplier, its products, and a cross-departmental analysis to ensure key bureaus review and give prior approval prior to procurement.
Now, there are a lot of strategies for acquiring software. There's commercial off-the-shelf acquisition and just installing it and using it. There's software as a service obtained from cloud services providers. And then there is development, which could be contracted out by the State Department or agencies in some senses are returning to doing in-house development even with scrims and so on. It sounds like you need some flexibility in how to apply all of this depending on the way that particular software is acquired. Fair to say?
That is true.
And that gets us to the question of software bills of material, which is something of a mystery to a lot of agencies, or in many ways, it is a piece of software itself. Do you use SBOMs, and how do you handle them? How do you get them? Where do you get them from, and what do you do with them?
This is currently a hot topic government-wide, Tom. The Department of State is progressing toward the use of software bill of materials, which will be a critical aspect in our ability to verify software integrity, but we're just not there yet. So OMB Memorandum 2218, which was issued on the 14th of September of this year, directs agencies such as state to ensure that our software producers have implemented and they attest to conformity with secure software development practices. So yeah, so going forward, SBOMs will be one of the artifacts that we will use to demonstrate conformance in conjunction with the vendor attestation. We'll also look at validating that software across our infrastructure as required as well.
Like a lot of agencies, then you're trying to build up chops in the use of the SBOM. And in the meantime, then the self-attestation is the main route to a supplier assurance at this point. Is that a good way to put
it? That is a good way of putting it. And we're also in the process of forming an SBOM working group to continue the development of guidance on how we'll capture and store those SBOMs. But like I said, we're not there yet, but as to most of the government. However, we do realize the need for ongoing collaboration with industry and government stakeholders to ensure that we're harmonizing that federal effort on automating and building a repository of SBOMs for reciprocity.
Right. Okay. So storing those up for future processing then at some point. And meanwhile, right, using the self-attestations, is there any way to verify that those are reliable? And how do you handle that at this point as best you can?
Well, without a tool, it's hard to really verify beyond the self-attestation. But, you know, I think it starts with forming that relationship with the developer so that you understand. You're forming that bond, that relationship, so that you understand his third-party vendors, et cetera, et cetera. And you use processes to such as assessments to validate where required, where you can.
Right. And then there's the issue of the software itself. If you don't have issues with it and you continuously monitor security events surrounding it, that's kind of a good indicator in the meantime, before the SBOM and all the rest of it, that it is in fact secure.
Great. So self-attestations, in my opinion, are a good first step to enhancing the software ecosystem. And then those other mechanisms that you place around that attestation to verify and validate. For us here at State, we're looking where we can to implement the assessments against our suppliers so that we dig into learning more about that supplier. Until we're able to accept SBOMs and actually have the tools necessary to verify and validate, we do what we can to ensure that we continuously monitor and assess the software for security and for use on our infrastructure.
Basically, then, there are two things that agencies in general need to look at. One is the supplier's business practices and its own contractors and suppliers. And then there is the code itself. So there's really two parts to the whole idea of verifying that code is safe.
Yes, that's true. That's true. And, you know, and as I said, that self-attestation piece is not the end goal, but it's the start of securing your software. And it's digging into the code. It's digging into those third-party relationships that supplier may have. And then it's looking, pulling all three together, you know. So here at State, we're currently pulling together three avenues in which to gain insight into our software suppliers. Eventually, we'll use SBOMs, third-party inspections and assessment that our team, our CSCRM team, has evaluated. So like I said, those attestations are, it's a start, but it's not the end goal.
And give us some more detail on those other two you mentioned besides the SBOMs, because that's a capability yet to be acquired and brought into State.
Right, right. So our team has created an assessment process where you look at, it's looking at the cybersecurity posture of the organization. It's foreign intelligence collaborations, for lack of a better word. It's taking that holistic approach and applying it to that software and then assessing, is this vendor or supplier someone that we really should be doing business with, or does it introduce risk into our environment? And then you take those necessary steps to warn those and make the judgment on whether to use that product or not.
And do you have preconceived rails, guardrails on what it is that you are acquiring? For example, they shouldn't do development of subcomponents or whatever in Russia, for example, or China, to make an extreme example. I don't think that's allowed in the federal government anyway, but that type of thing that you ask them about?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. We look at those various relationships and the threat that it poses to our infrastructure. So all of that's taking into consideration. You know, you wouldn't want to do business with a country that is known for introducing malware into software products. So yes, all of that is taken into consideration.
That's Zetra Batiste, Security Director of the Bureau of Information Management at the State Department. We'll return with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Have you been hit with a crippling cyber attack that stemmed from a third-party vendor? Executive Order 14028 calls for changes in cyber supply chain risk management to help agencies work with vendors more securely. Risk Recon, a MasterCard company, gives you the visibility to understand and act on risk in your cyber supply chain, giving you the clarity you need to do business with vendors who meet all compliance standards. Don't wait. Learn more today at riskrecon.com.
Welcome back to our interview with Zetra Batiste, Security Director of the Bureau of Information Management at the State Department. And do you have any third-party tools that you might use, your developers might use, or your software assessors might use, or it could be services as opposed to products, for example, to get a deeper view into software supplier practices and their supply chains?
We're currently investigating multiple options and haven't zeroed in on a single solution as of yet. Until then, I think it's best that we continue to forge those relationships with software producers and to ensure attestation and basically hold everyone accountable for best and secure practices.
Now, you have been at State Department a short time. You were at other agencies before this working some of these issues. What's your sense of the government-wide understanding of these issues of supply chain security? And do you sense collaboration among agencies to share what people know as best practices as people get better at SBOMs and verifying self-attestation and all the rest of it? Can you share interagency what people are learning?
Yes, I feel collectively it's important that we come together and we understand those relationships, those third-party relationships in software that poses a threat to us all. We're part of working groups with CISA and other entities where we're sharing information as such, where we're trying to understand SBOMs, how to gain that visibility into the software. So yes, indeed, all a government solution, it takes us all to be engaged and to learning about these things and sharing them across the board so that we, for one, secure our supply chain, you know, because a vulnerability that hits one eventually touches us all. So the more we learn, the better we're able to collectively protect our infrastructure.
And so what are the big challenges that you're facing right now in understanding the second or third party relationships that vendors have that could, again, affect State Department and, you know, a particular agency's cyber stance?
I think gaining visibility into these relationships and their potential weaknesses can be challenging, especially for large, complex organizations such as state. While SBOMs themselves can be beneficial to many, there are some challenges that arise from using SBOMs as a solution. And we know that slowing product development, every time the SBOM tool identifies a vulnerability, the software development team need to stop what they're doing to find a remedy. And what about the false positive alerts? It's a common problem with any SBOM to falsely alert on a vulnerability, which can complicate things for an organization security team. And then there's the need for complete automation, as bombs need to be automatically generated and machine readable. So that can be a challenge to achieve. Plus, there's the lack of training and understanding how S-bombs work, how to ingest them. And S-bombs can pose a challenge for many organizations. And this is what we're learning. So we're all, as a government, we're trying to get smarter on S-bombs. While these challenges do exist for the Department of State, my CSCRM team is actively working on an enterprise solution to ingest S-bombs and make better risk-based decisions in support of our mission here.
And this all occurs in the context of State Department, as so many agencies, modernizing its infrastructure, its software services, its digital services. So this is really crucial right now that we understand and get our arms around all of this software supply chain security.
Oh, most definitely. And we're learning new things every day. But I think once we are able to incorporate tools that automate the ingestion of S-bombs and learning the variances with those third-party suppliers and their third-party vendors, it just gives us that additional insight into the real threat, and we're better able to protect ourselves against it, to implement those mitigating controls.
And what about software as a service and cloud services like that? Because though that's still software coming into the agency, even though it may not be hosted there, same issues apply?
Oh, most definitely. And here at the state, all federal agencies use FedRAMP, which is a GSA managed program that provides a cost-effective, risk-based approach for the adoption and use of cloud services across the government. Within the department here, our PMO uses this framework to authorize, assess, and continuously monitor cloud products and services used in our environment. Our strategy for mitigating the various risks across software as a services and other cloud services, I think that's nestled in having a comprehensive compliance program consisting of an assessment process and remediation plan. So our compliance program here incorporates a risk register that includes the threats associated with SaaS and cloud providers that they can pose and our initiatives to implement and track and remediate those efforts. As we continue to build out that enterprise CSCRM policies and continuously collaborating with our stakeholders who engage our cloud service providers, I think it's imperative to ensure compliance with Executive Order 14028.
That's Zetra Batiste, Security Director of the Bureau of Information Management at the State Department. Next, we hear from Robert Costello, Chief Information Officer of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, an excerpt from an earlier interview airing for the first time.
Bob, one last piece before I let you go. The other side of this is cloud and software as a service, and the challenge there to kind of mitigate, monitor, deal with cyber risks. Is the cloud any different? Does it give you some more heartache or heartburn around supply chain risk management and dealing with that?
Yes, and yes. I think the cloud brings us enormous capabilities. But then there's also other issues there. I still think some parts of the government, including, you know, my own organization, are making that mind shift to cloud. I do think the big cloud providers are very, very concerned and very engaged on cybersecurity and supply chain issues. I think you can see that in their investments and their commitment. We all know who the big three or four are in that space. And I think that they're making, you know, very smart moves. And I've typically had very good relationships with them on that. I do think that, cloud does bring an opportunity across the board for us to make mistakes that maybe were a little bit harder in the data center. Oftentimes in the data center, you had your network team, you're pretty walled off. It was usually the network's team's fault if you opened up a connection to the internet. now, you know, as we're spinning up cloud technologies and others, it's much easier and faster to kind of make these external connections to open up your application to others. So I think you need to have good cloud governance. I think you need to have good guardrails around what people are doing in clouds, and really an incredible amount of monitoring. Know how your data is being used, where your data is going, and you know who is looking at your data, and continuously audit that. I think is really key. Not that we should do those things on prem as well, but I think one of the things that I've seen the mistakes made in the cloud is we spin it up and then developers have all these rights to do things that typically would have involved other teams before. And that's not bad. You just got to make sure you put the right controls and systems around it so that we know what's happening.
Does the software side of it, I mean, a lot of it, what you talked about is the infrastructure side or maybe even the platform side. Mm-hmm. Does the software side also give you some more, again, heartburn around where is it being developed? How often it's being updated? Who's updating it? Is that also data and information that you all are starting to say, okay, how can we have more insights, transparency around it?
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely seen a change from when many of us started. When I started in IT, it was like the quarter, well, you were lucky if you got quarterly releases. Maybe we were doing yearly or bi-yearly releases on like mainframe systems. So, I mean, a lot of places are going to continuous delivery. We've seen even, huge changes in how, even iPhones are updated. The latest iPhone operating system now be able to install, some level of security patches without user interaction, more kind of just flows in the background and gets pushed down. You're seeing that even in government development, we're sometimes doing releases once a day. So obviously that does bring up enormous capability, but you do want to make sure that you have the tools in place, that you're not decreasing your security team's ability to understand what's going on or the vetting of the code changes that are going out there. But the models have definitely changed. I mean, I still look back to the days. I used to be able to tell you second Tuesday of the month, that's the only time we're doing patching. And then we'd spend like 2 weeks in cleanup and then it's time for the next one. It is much more continuous now and much more continuous of capabilities being released. Many of us are heavy users of either, Microsoft 365 or Google G Suites. They release new capabilities all the time. There's a schedule or things to that, but it is all the time there are new capabilities coming out. And so it's even more important now that we stay on top of that and really ensure that our teams have the resources to understand all these changes that are coming down the pike.
Robert Costello, Chief Information Officer of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. Earlier, we heard from Zetra Batiste, Security Director of the Bureau of Information Management at the State Department. To hear this show again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Risk Recon, a MasterCard company on Federal News Network.
Have you been hit with a crippling cyber attack that stemmed from a third-party vendor? Executive Order 14028 calls for changes in cyber supply chain risk management to help agencies work with vendors more securely. Risk Recon, a MasterCard company, gives you the visibility to understand and act on risk in your cyber supply chain, giving you the clarity you need to do business with vendors who meet all compliance standards. Don't wait. Learn more today at riskrecon.com.